would be delighted to do it. It's always fun, and I'm happy to keep you up to date on all the exciting stuff that we're working on in this field.
Dr. Lewis, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll catch you at a later date.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I met this guy, and he looked like he might have been a hat check clerk at an ice rink, which in fact, he turned out to be. And I said, oh boy, right again. Could be you. It's a sky blue sky. Satellites are out tonight.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig here on KPFT HD3. I think we're going to have a lot of fun today. You know, I talk about a lot of serious stuff, and that's not all I'm interested in. I'm not a one-trick pony. So today, I have a guest who is kind of a local legend, and we are going to talk about the independent movie scene. My guest today is Joe Grassoffi. And for some reason, I always want to put an L in that.
That's okay, Mike.
But
there's no L. But
there is no L. Joe Grassoffi. First, let me say you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT HD3. You can also listen by going to kpft.org, clicking on one of the HD3 links. If you go to thinkwingradio.com, last night I created a graphic aid to try to help people figure out how to listen to us online. So you might try doing that. My guest, Joe Grassoffi, is an actor, director, casting director in Houston. He's worked on over 60 independent productions, including the recent productions, The Haunted Trailer, and In a Madman's World, which is the story of, is it Dean Corll?
Dean Corll, Wayne Henley, David Brooks.
Now, is this going to be sort of biographical, historical, or is this going to be sort of fictionalized?
Josh Vargas, the director of that film, actually interviewed Wayne Henley in prison, and the movie's based on those.
Hold on a second. We're going to start over because I think I forgot to turn on your mic. There you go.
Am I here now?
Now
there we go.
Okay. So, yeah, you see, terrible at the control board. I make no bones about it.
You did warn me.
I did warn you. I even warn people now in my show announcements how bad I am at the control board. So, anyhow, we were asking about the movie.
Right.
So is this going to be a fictionalized account or a more or less historical account or is interpreted by...
Josh Vargas is the director, and he is trying to stay as historically accurate as the budget allows. The film is based on his personal interviews with Elmer Wayne Henley in prison. He spent several hours with him asking questions about the events, so Josh wrote a script based on what Elmer Wayne told him.
Character names will be kept the same or fictionalized to the extent of different names?
I believe he's keeping them the same. That would be a question for Josh.
Okay.
That would be a question for Josh.
Oh, maybe we'll get an interview at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of interesting. I didn't really intend to kind of leap right into that. Actually, I should finish your intro, just to be fair. Your independent film directorial efforts include Laughing Boy, Dead of Night, Lars the Emo Kid, and a new film, Conjoined, which I have seen. You've got a couple of indie films in development. You're the founder of Southwest Casting at southwestcasting.com. Southwest Casting, one word, a lot of letters. And that is one of Houston's largest free casting resources for actors. Now, I think you said also you can cast crew?
I'm helping people when they come to me and say they need a specific crew type. It's more for actors, so I don't do a whole lot of crew requests. There are other sites for that. I try to emphasize the acting opportunities.
Everybody always talks about, I want to get into acting, I want to get into modeling. For the people that say, I want to get into crew, I think the path in some ways is more complicated because it's in a sense more subterranean.
Yes. There, to get on a crew, you kind of have to know someone that's already on the crew or look for crew calls specifically. And there are sites that offer crew calls. I don't know what they are because I have my crew people I call. That's right. I'm not familiar with the newest sites that do crew calls. I think a site called shortfilmtexas.com also has crew calls.
Okay.
So that would be a resource for that. But once you get on a set, you start meeting a lot of people and you start to see the same faces. And I've had people that come out as extras that really wanted to work on crew. And you befriend a crew member and you say, this is what I'd like to do. And often you will end up on that movie as a crew member, often in a volunteer position. But those volunteer positions lead to paying work if you're really good.
Now, you see, it's kind of interesting. I actually was on a locally made film as crew and use the opportunity to get into the film as an extra.
Right.
So it went the other way around.
Yeah, that's not uncommon either.
At the time, I was a window covering installer. It was the movie Rocket Man.
Right. I remember that.
And you can actually see me. Well, all the scenes where they showed my face, unfortunately, were cut. I ended up on the cutting room floor, the metaphorical and real cutting room floor. But there is one scene where they have a long shot of the control room, and if you know where to look, you can see the back of my head.
Nice.
Yeah, it's my moment of fame. Hey, it got me an IMDb.
Awesome.
You know, I got set decorating for the window coverings, and I got extra for mission control, and I've got my own little microscopic listing, not nearly as impressive as yours.
Oh, come on.
So I guess to sort of establish your creds, tell us about how and why you originally got into independent filmmaking, small filmmaking. You're a Houston native?
Yes, I was born and raised here.
So what kind of got you into this unusual niche of a living?
It's pretty much your standard story of a child that played around a lot with a video camera and some 8mm film. My dad used to make 8mm animated stop-motion films for us.
Fun.
We still have those, actually.
That's cool.
In high school, I had
you should incorporate them into one of your movies.
That's a great idea.
There's got to be something you can do with one of your characters who does this and like an homage to your dad. That
you
would
know
be
what?
Fun.
I think I can do that. Okay. We have the old Astroworld footage on 8mm,
so too. Cool. So
it could be shown somewhere. In high school, I didn't necessarily have much of an interest in this, but in college, that interest was reignited, and I got the bug to become an actor in college. I just wanted to do something different. I didn't want to follow the traditional footsteps of going into the car business like my father, although I have great respect for that. It has nothing to do with...
It's a living.
It's a great living.
In hindsight, I might have been better off doing that than becoming an actor after I had money saved up.
Well, but then the time would have passed you by, and maybe the inclination and the energy would have passed you
right.
by. With age, you get practical, and you get a little cautious.
That was my fear. If I got into a regular job, you get... I don't want to... I hesitate to get stuck, get stuck there, but
yeah.
People, I talk to people all the time who have had these dreams, but they just didn't get to pursue them, and I feel really lucky that I made that decision to do it right out of the gate when I could. It's taken a long time to establish myself to a point where I can actually make a living in this business without another job, which I feel I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, that actually puts you like in the top, 10% of theatrical people.
Yeah, I don't know the math, I feel really good about that.
It's a tiny number of people that are able to live on what they make.
Yeah, now that's not saying I make a living as an actor. I make a living as an act. I get
all the little bits and pieces.
All the little bits and pieces
add up to a living.
My main source of income is as a casting director, which allowed me to stay in the business for the most part.
Waiting tables to stay in the business.
Although there have been some conflicts with the acting and the casting, but we can talk about that later. But it has allowed me to stay in the business, learn a lot. And in college, I didn't just study acting. I also took filmmaking classes. So I would be in front of the camera learning as an actor, and I would be behind the camera learning how to edit, how to block a scene, how to make a film, which actually benefited me as an actor, because you quickly realize when you know what they're doing behind the camera and what they need, it affects what you know what to give them.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I did community theater, there are certain things you tend to do when you're standing. Your hands feel uncomfortable. Just standing with your hands hanging by your side doesn't feel natural. The temptation is to do some business with them or stick them in your pockets. And when I was doing community theater on stage, and every once in a while there would be a videotape of either the dress rehearsal or the show, and I would watch that, and it's like, that really looks bad. And you would know next time not to do it because you got to get that external view of yourself performing.
Right.
And that helps you, if you're conscious of it, improve.
Right. It's, to me, and I know a lot of actors... To me, it's important to actually watch the footage of a film I'm in to learn to see, oh, that worked, that didn't work, that looks stupid. A lot of actors don't like to see their own footage, and that's okay. I like to see for that exact reason. I move my head too much. Oh, I'm blinking a lot. What was I doing with my hand? I need to be aware of that next time.
Sometimes there's a lot of between lines, and that gets tiresome. It's like every actor, they're trying to show like seriousness, and it's like... And then the next actor goes, and it's like, haven't we had enough? It's like, ventilate, guys, ventilate. And I think that if actors watch the final result of something like that, what they should be thinking the next time a scene like that comes up is, maybe I should do less.
Yeah, that's what would you call that? The lappy telegraphing?
Is that
letting the audience know you're exasperated?
Yes, you have to indicate it somehow.
Right. Just you can. There's other ways to do that without going.
I guess it's the lazy way.
It could be. Yes.
It could be.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people getting paid very good money for the lazy way of exasperation.
Well, once you get to a certain point, people stop directing you.
If it works,
yes.
What I guess I've been calling in the setup to this show in my own mind, the invisible underground of small independent movies, which may in a way be a little, it wasn't oxymoronic the way I originally wrote it. It was a large part. You are a large part of an almost invisible underground of small independent movies. Now, that sounds oxymoronic. Not only in Houston, but to some extent nationally. What you do by its nature sometimes extends outside the borders of Texas.
Right. Our films get seen. My films, the ones that have been released so far, have been seen all over the world. You know, Laughing Boy has played in easily at least 20 countries.
Wow.
Dead of Night has made the rounds. It hasn't officially...
That's a pretty decent movie.
Oh, thank
Dead
you.
Dead of Night.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of
it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to watch, and actually the performances are not bad. And I think the guy who played the knight...
Wayne Stevens.
I think I had heard during one of the screenings that actually he had never done anything like that before.
He had never done any on-film acting. He was a member of the SCA. He does Renaissance Festival. Yes.
Society of Creative Anachronism.
Yes. He's a performer. He had just never performed for the camera. And he owned... That was his armor. By the way.
Wow. Wow. You have to see the movie to understand how cool the armor is. Now, privately, you and I have discussed this impulse to act or this impulse to make movies. Now, for myself, I tend to be a writer. Now, you could argue whether I'm an author. But, you know, I was once told that the distinction between a writer and an author is that an author has been published... A writer is simply anybody who feels compelled to write.
And I tend to agree with that.
So I think that there's probably a translation. Oh, do I need to do a station ID? This is KPFT HD3. You are listening to Mike Honig, Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig. My guest today is actor, director, casting director, etc., Joe Grassoffi. So this... If you're in this industry, this small, independent, almost underground film industry, I mean, for the most part, you act for free. You sometimes end up putting up money for the privilege of acting for free. I mean, why do people do it? They're not necessarily going to end up at the Oscars. They're not going to get Emmys. It's just, what's the compulsion here?
It's you love the craft, you know, you... It has never been easier to become an actor. And I say that mean I mean training is still important.
Sure.
You have
training,
to train
talent,
you have, learning
to
have the learning the technique, but to have the opportunity to step in front of that camera, trained or not, it's never been easier. That's good and bad.
Yeah.
You get a lot of people who don't have any training who start getting roles just because they'll show up. And that's great.
And
as long as you learn and get better.
To me. Now, have you ever heard of Sturgeon's Law?
Yes.
Sturgeon's Law, famous science fiction writer. I'm going to make the story short. Essentially, someone said to him in passing that 90% of science fiction is crud. And I believe that crud is the word that was actually used. And what became Sturgeon's Law was, yes, that's true, 90% of everything is crud.
Yes, I've used that reference for a long time.
So,
myself.
You know, we talk about actors and we talk about script writers and we talk about composers. And I think for me, one of the things that I have found to be really fun is when I am pleasantly surprised by a small movie. And it doesn't even have to be the whole small movie. It might be, gee, the musical score on this is really surprisingly good. Or the opening credits are done with really surprising skill and creativity. It's just the little things you look for that are just those pleasure moments.
There is so much talent at the low-budget level. There are a lot of men and women who are happy to be. They're incredibly talented, and if they were given the opportunity to shine in Hollywood, they would. But that's very hard to get to.
Yes.
And like for myself, it's very gratifying to show a film at ApolloCon and have 20 or 30 people stay, watch it, and get it. It's very rewarding and motivating and keeps you wanting to do this.
I actually met Joe over two or three ApolloCons. ApolloCon is a science fiction convention that's held annually in Houston around June. And I have become very fond of their movie room. The movie room is run by a guy named Snicker.
Snicker does a great job putting
Snicker
that together.
Snicker does a great job. He has very eclectic taste. He's very plugged into the scene. And I have found that when I go to ApolloCons, I spend an almost indecent amount of time in the movie room when I should actually be out having fun socializing with people, which is one of the great reasons I go to cons. But the movies he chooses are so unusual and so obscure and yet so engaging. And that's really what kind of got me interested in this topic. I had the opportunity to meet you and a couple of other filmmakers. And there's a quality in my notes, what I wrote down, originality, outrageousness, quality of writing, acting, musical scoring, cinematography, all of that hidden talent.
Yes.
And you could see how if they were just in the right place at the right time, these people could make a very good living at this, given half a shot. It's just what do they call it? Like an Easter egg in a DVD. When you find some feature that isn't obvious, and yet there it is, and you get that aha moment. And that's kind of the feeling you get with a lot of independent films.
You do. Technology has made everything so accessible to so many people, and there is so much talent. The market is saturated with product. There are so many films out there, and like we were talking about earlier, there are avenues for this material to get seen. But there is so much good stuff to get Hollywood to pay attention that something special needs to happen. I don't know what that is, but I know several filmmakers who can make Hollywood level films, Hollywood quality films. They're not there. They're here. And it's so hard to get Hollywood to take notice. And I have no
idea. When did the Third Coast become Vancouver?
When their tax incentives became so good.
Yeah. At least it's the same continent.
There is so much talent here, and I'm talking about Houston.
Yeah.
And if Houston is any sign of what the rest of the country is like, there are so many talented filmmakers. Just go to YouTube, and you know this stuff that goes viral. Science fiction short films, superhero short films, this stuff takes off.
And I know those exist now, but I didn't know they existed in the quantity and quality. Like, there's one series that Snicker introduced me to. I think it's called Star Trek: The Continuing Adventures or something like that.
Right.
And the guy who plays James T. Kirk, he is sometimes called Elvis T. Kirk because his day job is an Elvis impersonator. And apparently he dedicates a lot of this time and money to making these Star Trek short features, which once you get past the fact that the faces are different, and the music is recycled, and plot parts are a little recycled. But once you start getting past that and just getting into it, they're really a lot of fun to watch.
Yes.
They're just so cool, and the special effects, surprisingly good.
Some of those fan films are phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
One that comes to mind is a fan film for the video game Portal.
Yes, I've seen that several times. That was spectacular.
Yes. Then you got the Batman fan film.
You really want to know what's going to happen with the rest of that film, but it's only like a five-minute film.
Oh, but it was perfect.
It
was perfect.
Great film. The making of movies, I mean, it used to be that a small-budget movie was, and we're talking now 40, 50 years ago, was $100,000.
Right.
They used to have WOR in New York in the 50s and 60s. They used to have a movie series called Million Dollar Movie, which, you know, that was a big deal because I think Gone with the Wind was like one of the first million-dollar movies. And by then, a low-budget movie was like $50,000, $100,000, which today would be like $250,000 or $500,000.
Right.
You had to buy the film. You had to get the processing. Anything you shot that didn't work, the film was gone. I mean, you've shot the film. You've exposed it. It's used up. The equipment had to be rented, Aeroflex cameras or whatever it was you were using, very expensive equipment. The bar, and I don't say this in a negative way, the bar has gotten so much lower now for entry into exercising that creative impulse.
Maybe not the bar has been, it's the door is wider. It's easier for people to get in.
That sounds
right,
better.
Lower, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lower bar for entry, but it's not necessarily a lower bar for quality.
You're right. More people can get in.
Right.
More people can get in. Yes, my first films that I did, my first short in 1995 and my first feature in 98, we shot on film. My first short was called Death and a Salesman.
Yeah,
we shot it on 16mm film. The whole thing cost about $3,300, and it was an 8-minute film.
Hmm.
To compare that to Dead of Night, which is an hour and 40 minutes, and it cost the same amount of money.
What I have to ask, 25 words or less, what's Death and a Salesman?
A used car salesman dies on his car lot, and the Grim Reaper comes to claim him. And he snaps into salesman mode and distracts him and sells him a car.
Oh, that's kind of a mashup of a couple of Twilight Zone episodes.
Kind of, yeah.
It sounds very cute.
Yeah, it still gets viewed today, and it's almost 20 years old.
Pretty cool. how do these small movies make any money? And I'm not even necessarily talking about breaking even. I'm just talking about generating any income to defray their expenses, let alone make a profit. And how do they do that? What's the venue?
They do, but I can really only speak for myself as far as numbers go. Laughing Boy has brought in some money. It's never going to recoup the amount of money I spent to make it.
It's no Titanic.
It's no Titanic. Dead of Night, Lars the Emo Kid Conjoined, the budgets are so small, there's a very good chance I'll see that money back and be able to pay the people involved. Other filmmakers in town, I intend to have conversations about the money they've made if they're open to talking about it, because I want to know and follow the path that they've taken or the structure that they've built for themselves. And see, these films get released. There's Jacob, there's Zombified, all available. Jacob made it to Redbox. I don't know if Larry Carroll has made any money yet. That's his business, and he can share that with me when he's ready to.
The information, not the business.
Right, the information. Because if we start to make money, we can keep doing this, and it's easier to raise money. And when you raise more money to make your next film, you can make that next film better and raise the bar for yourself personally. And it's good for everybody. It's good for the community to see these films get better and better and a wider release.
About 13 years ago, I was actually in a movie called The Sleep Eaters.
I remember that.
And as far as I know, it has never been publicly shown. You cannot find it on IMDb. I have seen rough cuts of it. It's a movie that really deserves to be seen. It's easily as good as any of the small films I've seen, better than many.
There are a number of
maybe
films.
You can help with that if we can track down the producer. Maybe
I would be happy
figure
to.
A way. It's really a good film.
But the thing, I've experienced this with other filmmakers, some films that I've been in, some filmmakers that I've met over the years as well that had nothing to do with their films, but they make a decent film. And they lose the motivation to do anything with it. Because making an independent film is so stressful because you end up doing so much yourself and it takes so long and it can wear you down if you don't have the stamina to keep going. It's a marathon.
Yeah, it's hard.
Independent level.
I mean, that's true of so many aspects of life.
Yeah,
is you have a grand goal and sometimes you just going over all the obstacles on the way to that goal just wears you down.
Right, and I'm referring to the ultra low budget level, where you don't have money to pay a sound guy to do your sound mix. You don't have money to pay an editor to edit for you, where you do the edit, you do the sound mix,
cheap
then
cook,
you do the
washer.
Color. And months go by. In my case, for one film, a couple of years go by. And you lose the momentum to keep that thing going. And I get it when a filmmaker just says, I've had enough. I don't want to see this thing anymore. I'm putting it away.
Yeah.
That's a pet peeve of mine because so many other people, the actors especially, put so much effort into that and no one will ever see their work. So if you're going to do an independent film, make sure you have the stamina to at least get one public screening.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? At least get it into IMDb.
Yeah.
And when I talk about IMDb, we're talking about the Internet Movie Database, IMDb.com. There is a wealth of interesting information, history, trivia. Joe, I'm on IMDb. It's amazing.
It's a great resource.
It's a terrific resource.
And if you go IMDb Pro, you can get contact information from filmmakers. You can see what's coming to your area. It's a good resource.
You are listening to KPFT HD3. This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig. You can attempt to call in if you wish at 713-526-8737, but I'm not going to promise I can get you on the air because I'm really only semi-competent on control board. I make no bones about it.
But can we talk about these films getting released real quick?
Absolutely.
Continue?
Yeah, please.
Some of these filmmakers I'm referring to are people I knew like 10 years ago when they were still shooting film and the process was a lot more expensive. And, you know, not only did they not have the stamina to see it through, but just the money ran out. And when you're dealing with actual celluloid film, it's a very expensive process. Now, with 1080p, 24 frames per second DSLRs that shoot really, really good video, there's no excuse for money to be the reason you walk away from your film.
You can now make a film on like a Canon 7D with a flash drive in HD. So
yes.
There isn't even anything actually moving.
No.
And it makes really high quality stuff.
Right. We shot Lars the Emo Kid and Conjoined on a Canon T2i, which is the baby sister to the 7D. It's not even the 7D. And finishing your film is one thing. Finish your film. Now there's such a great avenue. There's so many avenues to get these films out there. Uploading them, you can burn your own DVDs if you go that route. You can replicate them, which is not that much more expensive. There's YouTube, there's Vimeo, there's so many outlets for your work. Let it get seen. You still have to promote it yourself.
Yeah, on the one hand, it can get buried in the sheer volume of stuff that's there. But the fact is, it can be watched.
It's there.
Found.
It's there. Your actors can at least email a link to their family and say, there's my movie. People can see it. It's in the world. It's accessible. If no one watches it, that's a different story. But it's out there. It can find an audience. It could do really well. You don't know. You owe it to everyone else that worked on that film to get it out there.
You know, sort of obliquely and yet related, my stepdaughter, when she was in school, she did a class in, like, animation and video, and she was looking to get a job at Google. So she made this, what she called her video cover letter, and it runs about 3 to 5 minutes. Everyone told her, no, that's not going to work. You know, you shouldn't put that out on YouTube. Just, you know, do a resume, do a cover letter, blah, blah, blah. And these are people at her school who are like grade advisors and job advisors. And her teacher said, don't do it. And she said, you know, just for fun. And she's very artistic. So she did a lot of her own sketches, and sort of her style is sort of a jumpy animation, and did her own narration. To date, I think that little thing has gotten about 1,500 views.
Mm-hmm.
But among the 1,500 views were some people at Google. And she got the job.
Wow, yeah.
So, you know, this is your little movie that suddenly, even on a limited basis, makes good, and certainly good enough.
Well, it's different. There are no rules. Getting into this business, there are no rules on how to get in. I can tell you this is what I did. Here's some avenues for you to take. But that's a good example of there are no rules. There is a suggested path, a traditional path. It's not for everybody.
Right. I think a really crucial thing, and as a parent or a step-parent, one of the things that I keep reminding my stepdaughter, my wife, who is a much more conventionally minded person than myself, you know, there are these low probability things that people get to do for a living, that they either make a living or they make great fortunes. And it's like, well, the odds of success in that are so small, but on, you know, it's like a lottery. If you don't play, you can't win.
Right.
And someone has to do it. There may be many failures, but just because there are many failures, it doesn't mean your dream isn't the dream that's going to succeed.
Right.
People have to try what they love.
Right. I know a handful of actors who I've met over the last 2 or 3 years who just, you know, said, to hell with it. I'm quitting my job. I'm selling my company. I'm going to be an actor. And bam, they just shot right to the top because they were good. They had the mindset that was important to become successful and wouldn't take no for an answer.
And I think it's really important to have that willingness. I mean, in a sense now, not that I'm making money at it, we're going to talk about working for free, but doing radio, doing broadcast or narrowcast, it's like my fourth career. It's something people have told me I should do since I was 17. I got on radio the first time in 2010, and people have told me, I will say this because other people say it, not I, people have told me that I am a natural, but it's something that, you know, what are the odds? How many people that think, oh, I would love to do radio? How many people even get to do radio for free? So I'm already in a very tiny number,
right,
of people that have had the opportunity to actually go to a licensed station and do broadcast. So what are the odds? Well, the odds are tiny, and yet...
You're doing it.
I'm doing it. And I think that applies to the independent film industry, which is an almost invisible industry. You know, people think of YouTube as like little films, but it's an industry.
YouTube is an industry. People are contributing to that industry. A lot of people that are contributing to it aren't seeing any of the money.
Right.
YouTube, there are some people making a living off of YouTube, though.
Yes.
But most of this stuff...
Always this tiny percentage that manages to rise to the top.
Yes, there's always going to be that 10% that's good. Some people are making a living at it. A lot of people try, and they just can't. They just can't find that gold. You know, they're not the angry video game nerd.
Sometimes you're the artist, but you're not the marketer.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it takes a village.
Right. Someone, Reddit is really good at finding those diamonds in the dirt, diamonds in the rough. Anyone can upload a YouTube video. One suggestion I have for actors is just create a character. Start doing 2 and 3 minute videos with that character and put it on YouTube. Try different characters. Make little series. It doesn't cost anything but your time if you know how to do the camera. If you know how the technology works, it's just time. And who knows? One of those characters could catch on. You just don't know. You got to try.
And I think it helps to get plugged into a community. And I think that brings us sort of logically to, so how do people get involved in this?
Well, Southwest Casting is one good way.
Right.
It's free. You sign up. You get emails if you want to submit. You follow the instructions in the email. There are other websites. I mentioned shortfilmcasting.com earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. You can find information from all over the state there.
And Houston Film Commission.
The Houston Film Commission.
The Texas Film Commission.
Both of those, I believe, update casting and crew calls.
Weekly.
Thursday or Friday. Those are great resources. When I got started some 20 years ago, there was no website for the Houston Film Commission. It was just a phone number to call every Friday.
Then they graduated to a bulletin board.
Yes. I would faithfully call that number every Friday to see if there were any auditions that I needed to know about. When there weren't, it was another week before I could find anything out. And it was at U of H, and every Thursday or Friday, I would go by and look at the call board. The bulletin board, see if there were any auditions. That was the way to do it then. The internet has made it so easy to get involved. There are a number of acting groups in town that share audition information with each other. It's never been easier to get your feet wet as an actor. That being said, it's never been more dangerous because there are so many people out to take your money. There are websites that charge a monthly fee to give you the same information you could find elsewhere for free. There are people that overcharge for photographs because it's part of the quote-unquote package that they offer. There are schools that advertise on TV that hard sell you and try to sell you $5,000 to $7,000 classes, which you could get the same level of education from an independent teacher for $300 to $500. You just got to do your homework. People get so excited about this and jump in, and there are people out there to take advantage of that. And the scammers, I'm using that word.
Advisedly, we're lumping.
Yes. They will not tell you the free ways to get involved. They want your money. They won't tell you about me. They won't tell you about the Houston Film Commission. They won't tell you about other websites.
In their mind, they're running a legitimate business. They're offering a service, and if someone wants to pay for that service...
Some it is a legitimate business. It's just they're charging for something you could get for free elsewhere.
Exactly.
Many of them are that. You know, the websites that charge $25 a month, membership fees to give you access to audition notices, sure. They're offering you a service. They're paying people to scour the country for these audition notices and put them in one place. So,
what are the red flags for the kinds of things that someone who wants to be an actor or someone who wants to get into crew or some aspect of film or theater production, what are the red flags to look for to avoid?
The hard sell. If you're pursuing an education and if you're pursuing acting classes, be careful of the hard sell. and the demand for your credit card number right away. That's a big one. That gets a lot of people, and it sours them. If they fall for it, it sours them, and we lose a lot of good people, potentially good people, because they got ripped off the first time they tried this. Some other red flags could be, and I'm saying could be, if you go to Craigslist and there's an audition notice and they invite you to audition at their house. Could be a red flag. If you go, be sure someone knows you're going. Bring someone with you. Ask if other people are auditioning at the same time. Because you don't know. These are strangers.
Yeah, what's that movie that you said this gentleman is making? The one about Dean Corll?
Oh, In a Madman's World.
In a Madman's World. I mean, that would be a potential scenario for someone like that.
It's entirely possible, and you don't. I discourage actors from looking at Craigslist at all to find audition notices because it's so iffy. It's so dangerous because adult filmmakers, pornographers use Craigslist, and you don't want to find yourself accidentally in that position.
Now, maybe intentionally, but absolutely not accidentally.
Right. So just be careful. There are people who sell themselves as talent agents who really aren't. Unfortunately, about 3 years ago, the state of Texas deregulated talent agents, so there's no law to govern them. You can print business cards and say you're a talent agent, and there's no one that can...
God bless Texas.
Yeah. No one can stop you. No one is policing you. And that's unfortunate because the day they deregulated, all these little companies started popping up around town.
So if somebody, you know, we talk often about people that want to get into acting, but the behind the camera stuff, a little less obvious. People who may have a script, people who maybe just would love to work the control board. I would love to have someone to work the control board. People that want to be involved in set dressing, or, I mean, they don't want to move to Los Angeles in order to do this thing, and yet it's not as obvious for them what their path of entry is.
Right. Going back to our little discussion earlier, if you get on a set, you can befriend someone who is doing what you're doing. You know, go be an extra on a low budget movie. If they have a wardrobe person, let's say you were interested in costuming, be nice, get to know the wardrobe people. They often need assistance. Just because it's a low budget, the thing about working for free is you meet a lot of people quickly. It's networking. If you know your intentions, these costumers, set dressers, and other crew members who are working for little or no money on this independent film may also work in the commercial world that pays really well. None of these people work on commercials for free. Often because they make money on commercials, they can take time off and help the filmmakers in town. They may bring you on to a commercial as an assistant. You may get paid for that. When bigger films come to town, people bring their team. If a certain costumer gets hired, he or she is going to bring their team with them if they can and get them paid. Same thing with the crew. The camera people stick together. You have your director of photography who likes to work with the same assistants because you know what you're getting. Get on a film. You're interested in camera work? Have a conversation with one of the camera team. They may bring you on as an intern on another project. A lot of people here are very loyal, and we like to work with the same people because we know what we're getting.
You actually see that a lot even in big films.
Sure.
You get to see certain directors working with certain producers.
Exactly.
With certain score people, and obviously they begin to rely on them. They know what to expect from them. They've seen the performances they do, the reliability they have. I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's a relationship business,
right,
as much as
anything. I'm friends with several stuntmen in town. That's a very hard arena to break into. It's a very close-knit group. But
breaking being the operative word.
Yes. But when they see someone who has potential and professionalism, let's start emphasizing that word professionalism, they take notice. because they can't do it forever. They get involved in big films that need a dozen stuntmen, and there may not be enough. Their guys may be busy on other things. Get on a set. If you know your goals, get on a set, start talking to the people who can help you get there. Be professional. Don't be pushy. They're busy, so don't consume their time with questions. Offer your help. Maybe at the end of the day, say, I'm interested in helping you. Here's my phone number. If you ever need an intern, I'd love to volunteer and learn from you and help you. Don't be a pest and be professional.
You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT HD Channel 3. My guest today is actor, director, casting director, multiple threat Joe Grassoffi. And we're talking about small movies, underground movies, independent movies, what they are, where to find them, how to get into them. So are there places in Houston where they have essentially movie festivals where if you want to see these small movies that have these little gems that you can find like Easter eggs, is there a place or places that you can go or look to see them?
There are some festivals in town, but also a lot of filmmakers are thinking outside the box. There are filmmakers who are showing. Friday night, Wayne Slayton's Back Road. Wayne Slayton is a filmmaker in town. It's showing on the roof at a bar. There's a lot, and that's what I love about this, is you can think outside the box. When I spent some time in Los Angeles, and this is just an example, and we'll go back to Houston. There was a Shakespearean film called 12 that would show in random places once or twice a month.
You'd have to, like performance art.
No, it was a film. It was just
guerrilla film.
You knew the film was going to show Friday, but you didn't know where until he put it on the website. And then you show up to a parking lot, and he's projecting it on the side of a parking garage.
It's just cool.
Yeah, there used to be a place in town that I loved called the Zocalo Theater that every Friday night, or not every
I think
Friday,
it was on Shepherd.
Fagan. And Shepherd.
Fagan.
But I think it was once a month, you show up, you bring a short film, they show it. They showed it. Didn't matter what it was. And we brought some stuff. I went there all the time and brought a few things myself, and it was great. But there are avenues for films here in town. Just get on the web, look up Houston Film Festivals, a number of screening venues will pop up.
So, to sum up a little bit here, we still have a little time, but just to sum up a little bit, if you want to start getting involved in auditioning as an actor or getting on as crew, the Houston Film Commission is HoustonFilmCommission.com. The Texas Film Commission is a little more complicated. It may just be easier to look it up by saying Texas Film Commission, and then you get this long just Texas Film Commission. That's easier. Actors Access, do they have a website?
They do, actorsaccess.com. And there's two other websites that actors should know about, nowcasting.com and castingnetworks.com.
And, of course, Southwest Casting.
Southwest Casting. Southwest Casting is a free site. The other three I mentioned, Actors Access, Now Casting, and Casting Networks, are pay sites, but they are completely legit. Professionals use them. I use them as a casting director for casting purposes. You may pay a little fee per audition submission or a yearly fee to submit to any audition you want, but those are the real sites. Professionals are using those three sites.
We talked a little, you and I, about Ed Wood. I think when you talk about small, independent, low-budget films, if you know anything about film, or if even you've just seen the Johnny Depp movie, Ed Wood in the 1950s, what would Ed Wood look like today?
What would his films look like today?
Yeah. How would he be doing his movies today? And would it have helped him produce better movies? Or
I don't think so.
He was just that movie kind of guy.
From what I know about him, obviously I didn't know him,
right.
But from watching so many of his films, it's very clear he was passionate about filmmaking. He just didn't understand the technique completely. And the
those long rides of a police car up a dirt road.
Yeah.
Long.
Yeah.
It was a sensibility.
It was a yes, it was absolutely a sensibility thing. And you see that in a lot of independent films today. People get the camera without any... They watch movies, but they don't know how to make their movie look like the movies that they watch.
But if you have the ability to learn, if you have the ability to self-critique, if you're willing to grow, we all have to start with baby steps. You can start out your first independent film, you know, whether you do it at the age of 10 or 12 or the age of 30 or 40, it may not look very good. But if you look at it with a critical eye as opposed to a hopeless eye, you can say, oh, you know, I could have done that a little better. Maybe next time, maybe the cut will be a little shorter. Or
right.
I won't jiggle the film so much, or it'll be a closer shot.
I try to learn from everything I do. You know, Dead of Night, I let some scenes go on too long. There's some slack in it. I hate that about it. So on the next one, I learned the art of the tighter cut. And then there's Conjoined. It would just... You just fly through the movie because it's so fast.
Well, I can understand how... You can be in love with a particular scene or be in love with a story to the point where it pains you to take out pieces.
Oh yeah.
And that's really when you need an objective person who is emotionally detached from the project,
right,
to say you really don't need to have the last 2.5 minutes
of
this
scene.
It took
me... I was that guy when I first started. I love that scene. It's 8 minutes long, and people just said, you've got to cut that in half. I'm talking about a scene in Laughing Boy, where it's just people... The whole movie's basically people talking, but there was one scene that went on forever, and I had to learn there, you got to let it go. And it got easier and easier to the point where it's like, there's a scene in Lars the Emo Kid that I didn't even cut. I didn't even put it together to see what it looked like. I just watched the rest of the film and said, I don't even need it. So it's gone.
But it pains.
It gets easier.
It's like a lost girlfriend.
It gets easier. As the more you let these things go, the easier it gets.
Sometimes when I write a commentary, I may fall in love with some little piece that I wrote because I like the sentiment, but when I come back to it the next day, which is often a good idea, and then I read it again, it's like, there's just no way I can keep that piece in. It just really doesn't work
right
with the rest of it. And I may set that paragraph aside and track change or something, hoping I'll get to use it somewhere else, but, you know, it hurts. It's like letting go of one of your babies. So we've got about, by my reckoning, because we don't have a digital clock here, I'm thinking we have about 4 more minutes. Do you have some favorites that you might suggest that people look for online or in whatever other venues they might be playing in? And they can be your films, they can be somebody else's films.
Venues or films themselves?
Films.
Films.
Well, venues if you know of some, but
well,
I'm
there
thinking
are
films.
There are several, and I know I'm going to forget some. Because there are...
That's right. It's not the Academy Awards.
They're getting better and better. And there's Larry Carroll's Jacob, which is on Netflix and Redbox. Todd Cook's Zombified is available on several video-on-demand services. Haunted Trailer, which you saw some...
Yeah, Haunted Trailer. I saw that at ApolloCon, and apparently you are totally not offended when I say that this movie is full of crap.
No, not offended at all. Nor I don't.
And
believe,
if you see the movie, you will totally understand.
I don't believe Chuck Norfolk, the director, would be offended
either.
Yeah,
it's a very crappy movie.
That'll be out soon.
But you'll notice that we actually mean that in the most positive possible way.
There's physically
a lot of crap in that movie.
There's Josh Vargas's In a Madman's World, which hopefully will be released later this year.
I get the impression that's something that's trying to get done as really a more serious small budget film, not a fun movie.
No, he took it very seriously, and it's not a slasher film, it's not a horror film, it's not a serial killer film. It's a film about how this teenager got wrapped up into all this. how easily he got lured into it.
That's the kind of film that it would seem to me does not require money. It requires artistry and thought.
Yes, it. Well, it did. It did require money because
But it's not a function of money, is what I'm saying.
No, he tried hard to find locations that looked like they were from the early 70s, which of course gets harder and harder as the years go by. So when he did find those places, it often took money to get them. We had to rent one of the actual Dean Corll houses. We had to pay the homeowners to let us in there for the day. So some of the film actually took place in the house where the murders took place.
Wow,
that was weird.
Yeah.
There's a movie called Psychic Experiment that Mel House did that did pretty well on cable and DVD. When you can find, what I recommend is you watch the films that are being made here. If you like the film, you can reach out, you start following the filmmakers, and they share information. You find out when their next film is happening. There's a lot more going on, and people are starting to raise the bar. There's always going to be new blood. There's always going to be people who need people to work for free to get the film made. The people that are good at that level start to raise the bar for themselves and start to pay. And a lot of these filmmakers are loyal. If you stuck with them through the freebies, they're going to take you up to the next level when they have money. So don't be afraid to work for free.
Well, the word amateur, essentially the root of that is someone who does something for love.
Right. It doesn't have anything to do with the skill level.
No.
I mean, there are professionals, the people getting paid who
aren't very good, and vice versa. And I guess while we haven't touched on it much, we have a couple of minutes left, an easy way to start to get involved is community theater.
Community theater is a great way to get involved as an actor.
They're always looking for new faces to audition. Small parts, big parts, crew people, and some of the actors that do community theater also have agents, and they do paying gigs, and that is a way to connect. That's
right.
A way to network.
That's how I got started. I found Fort Bend Community Theater.
I actually did a show for them.
Yes. Some of those people are hobbyists. That's great.
Do you know Sean K. Thompson?
Yes, I know Sean pretty well.
Ah, say hi for me.
Okay.
What was it? Calling Metropolis, I think, was his baby that got the premiere at the Fort Bend Community Theater.
Right, right.
I still have that T-shirt. My house burned down. I was wearing that shirt that night. It's the only shirt that survived the fire. Calling Metropolis.
Now, the great thing I love about community theater is that people can scratch their acting itch without leaving their jobs. If
yes.
you just want to be an actor, you just
and
want to
better.
Yeah. If you just want to act and you're not worried about the money and you don't want to leave your job, community theater is the way to go because you rehearse after work. You perform on the weekends.
It's a serious commitment. I was in community theater for about 3 years, and I would have to say between rehearsals and learning lines, and learning lines comes hard to me, about 20 hours a week.
Right. But you're an actor.
And it's fun.
Yeah, I met some great people that I still work with to this day through community theater.
Well, I think that we're getting to that point where if we don't stop the show will stop us. So I want to very much thank my guest, Joe Grassoffi. You can find him on imdb.com. You can look for his movies, The Haunted Trailer, Lars the Emo Kid, Conjoined. He's involved in so much stuff. I'm having a lot of fun knowing him. I'm looking forward to learning a lot more. You've been listening to Thinkwing Radio with Mike Honig during one of my less serious, less political shows, so I'm not just a one-trick pony. This is KPFT HD3, and look forward to speaking to you next week. Take care.
virtual house arrest for 2 years. Also, the American who punched a brown bear on the nose and the Burmese film star who started a free funeral service for the poor. That's Outlook after NewsHour.
BBC World Service, the world's radio station.
BBC